Still recording or not? Probably not.
It says recording now. So yeah, I think you got it recording again now. Yep.
Okay, so you there? You see it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I
rate
very heavily on the book, and in the preface it said do chapter 1 and 2 and then switch to chapter 12, and I tried that and it was a disaster. I'll not do that again. And I had it all laid out for, I was going to spend like 3 or 4 lectures on that material, but so I had to recover from that switch, so I won't make that mistake again. But now we get into the really interesting stuff, because we're beyond Hodgkin Huxley. I spent more than enough time talking about that and the simulations and how it works, physical models versus their phenomenological models. And then we get into how does the brain, neural assembly. So this is, you know, brain parts.
So all right.
Hippocampus, thalamus, RNA, brain anatomy, the layout of the brain, all the different parts of the brain. So I think I have this picture I got off the internet, which we just go over. There's this thing here. This is 7 pages long, and I really spent some time talking about each of these areas and what approximately do they do. So it's explained here. So they have a rough idea of the difference between Wernicke's area and Broca's area, which is speech perception and production, frontal lobe, visual, parietal lobe. I had to learn how to pronounce all these things. That was not that actually easy. So, and this is nicely described here. So I think this was a, and everybody had a copy of it. They could download it and a PDF and talk about the anatomy of the cortex, the surface of the brain, the gyruses, the sulcus, what's this, the corpus, whatever it's called. So this was a really important, it was especially important for me because I'd never really done it. I had some vocabulary limitations, so I got a lot out of teaching this, and I really feel good about it, and the students definitely understood it. I'd already explained about how a neuron works, vesicles, synaptic clefts, neurotransmitters, all that kind of stuff, so I didn't have to talk about that very much, so we're done with that. So at this point, we went in.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, there's a paper on the hippocampus, which it's a classic paper from the literature. It talks about young, different people. I get like 10 different people, I think it was. I'm looking for it. I'm not sure where it is. And these 10 different people had a part of their hippocampus removed because they had life-threatening stroke.
Let's see. Oh, okay, stroke.
They'd go in there and they'd hack a piece of hippocampus out. And in some cases, you couldn't even tell the difference, although there was a difference. And in some cases, the people had no short-term memory whatsoever. They couldn't form memories. And that paper is here someplace. But we spent at least one lecture talking about that, because that the students referred to it in their final paper, saying, you know, somebody could say, what does a coffee cup look like? And they'd say, well, I can't tell you. Meanwhile, they're holding a coffee cup in their hand and they're drinking out of it. So that kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. Okay. And then here's the hippocampus memory. So this is the paper right here.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. I've
seen this paper before, but it's a very nice paper. It's got to be a classic. So this was back in 1957, and these people actually did these experiments. It shows what they took out, how much they took out, where they took it out, and then it talks about the subjects in each different case, case one, HM, and what their characteristics were before and after. So it's a really beautiful piece of work, I think. And then I got into information processing. So that's what the brain does. I mean, what does the brain do? Well, it processes logical information. It comes to conclusions. You can tell somebody to, do a very complicated thing and they'll go do it, and they have memory of it. And why does that all work? And how does it work? And I compared information processing and the basic representation of information to what's called a sigma-delta converter. And I think there's some very strong analogies here. And so this is a piece of hardware that you can buy for $3. Every PC has a couple of them in it doing the A to D conversion, D to A conversion. And I think the brain is doing, has got a lot of similar properties. So I talk about that one lecture. Lung alternatives. I'm not quite sure. Where does thirst come from? I don't know what that's about. Boolean logic is what the brain is about. It does Boolean logic. So that gets into Pitts and what's their name? He's famous. And all that goes back to the history. McCulloch Pitts. So all of the different people who McCulloch Pitts, the AI model, Boolean algebra, deep learning subject. I covered the history up to somewhere into the 60s about that.
That's great.
And then, so that's part three. So I haven't finished with part two. So part two really gets into brain function, ion distributions during a spike. We covered this already, but I touch upon it again. This is showing a plot of where the sodium and the potassium are during the rising phase, the falling phase. I'm not sure why it's stuck back here, but it is for logical reasons. Huxley. Helmholtz was the first one to measure spike velocity at 27 meters per second. He's the 1850s.
All right.
And
we have them do that in, we have them measure action potential velocity in 303 lab too. So
that's cool. Yeah. So the way Huxley did it was he had a voltmeter, a galvanometer, and he put electricity on the nerve and he'd say how long until the muscle jerked.
And all right.
He'd move the voltage source closer to the muscle and he took the time difference and he got 27 meters per second, which is a pretty good number.
That's good. Yep.
The first neural recording from the toad eye was by Adrian. And so he actually was recording from the retina and he walked around a darkened room and the thing was firing and he realized that toad eye was responding to his movements. And that was kind of a shock. And that was a big deal. He became knighted because of that. And then I have this feeling from teaching it that spikes are only supposed to propagate from the brain down to the toes and, the receptors, but there's no reason that spikes can't propagate back. And I haven't seen any literature on this at all. And I think that makes so much sense. You can actually propagate the spikes in both directions. There's a minor interaction when the two spikes pass each other, but that's a relatively unlikely event. I think that's a fundamental idea that needs to be
explored. Yeah. So getting the depolarizations and things like that to propagate back is fine. But when you get to the synapses, aren't synapses one direction?
Yeah.
So that might cause some problems with transmission for multiple neurons, but for one neuron, yeah.
Well, I haven't pursued this.
Yeah.
But you could branch off the neuron before it gets to the synapse.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that I talk about, and I don't see it here, but is the branching, this Rawl's equation. So it's an impedance matching thing. It says when you branch a fiber, the impedance of the incoming fibers has to be equal to the impedance of the outgoing fiber. So you're going from, you know, you're going, you can take it both ways, but you got to make sure for the spike to get past the branching point, it's got to have an impedance matching. And this is called Rawl's equation. And that's very carefully covered and why it has to work that way.
Huh.
So I talk about that.
All right.
Todai circuit, muscle dynamics, Krebs cycle. I don't really talk about the Krebs cycle, but I do mention it because that's where the energy comes from. So,
all right.
I have Bernoulli trials here, which is one of my favorite topics, but I don't think I talked about it. Somebody referred to it in the, so anyway, it's on my mind, but for other reasons. But Bernoulli trials are important for making Boolean decisions. You get information as yeses and nos, pass fails, and then you infer something from it. So it is relevant, but I don't think it's really relevant to neurophysics, neurophysiology. If it is, I haven't quite figured out how. Okay, and then somewhere around here, there's more brain anatomy. I may have clicked on that button already.
Yeah, that was great.
Somewhere around here, I switch to the auditory system because this is part three, by the way.
All right.
So part two was up here and I was talking about the weekly organization, the daily organization, and I failed to mention I'm now moving into part three. So the last, I don't know how many, maybe six or seven lectures, if you want to know exactly how many, it's, you have to look here. But I started talking about the auditory system. So I don't know that much about the visual system. And of course, the visual system is very, very heavily represented in the MIT work and a very, very famous work. And so rather than talk about that, which I'm not going to do a very good job of unless I, you know, study the hell out of it, I know the auditory system like the back of my hand. So I just decided I'm going to take this opportunity and talk about the auditory system.
Sounds great.
Which I think is a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I also talked about, you know, what are the senses? How many senses are there? Well, everybody says there's five senses. And I said, man, is that a misrepresentation? How many touch sensors do you have in your body? 100,000? You can touch any part of your body. There's a sensor there that picks it up. And your sense of smell is amazing too. So to say there's five basic senses, I think this is a misrepresentation of what's going on because the brain is collecting all this information from thousands, not millions of sensors all over the body. The eyes and the ears are obviously the most important starting point, but they're hardly the only thing. And it's correlating all this information. And, you know, you learn your grandmother's face and, you know, you do all of these decision processes. You're a Boolean processor. All you do all day long is make Boolean decisions, logical decisions. The brain is a Boolean processor. And without all of those inputs, it wouldn't be able to do anything. So I really hammer on that. And I'm quite happy about that. That worked out at the very end. So starting somewhere, makeup of a virus, I had to talk about. I stuck that in because I had to talk about viruses. What's the difference between a virus and a bacterium? And then here, topic lecture 35. Now I'm definitely into hearing science. Lecture 1, lecture 2, lecture 3, lecture 4. And I realized I needed to mention CRISPR, bacteria, antibody. So I jumped out for a minute and then I kind of came back in the lecture. And then I had Mark Hasegawa Johnson give a talk. He teaches a course on machine learning. So he came and gave a lecture and then Victor came and he gave a fantastic lecture about the squid eye, what's the name? No, not squid. A shrimp, Manis Shrimp Eye.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
lovely, lovely lecture.
All right.
I recorded it. So it was fantastic. So that's it. And what I'm looking for is criticism. I want criticism. I want you guys to get together and say, okay, you know, you're going to say, what you did is great, John, but. So come back and help me clean this up. I'm clearly going to teach it the third time next year.
Yep.
But I'm 77 years old. By then I'll be 78 years old. And you better think about who's going to take this over. And I could co-teach it now a fourth time. But at some point, you guys, you know, I'm not planning on dying. I'm in good health, but, you know, it's inevitable. Okay.
You don't want to teach this for the next 20 years either. So
it's not going to be possible.
Yeah.
If I were 50, I could do that. I have another course that I teach. I have one course that I teach is a half semester course. It's a math course and it's 200 level 298 course.
Yeah. I remember seeing that. Yeah.
And then on the semesters, I don't teach the neuroscience course. I teach this. It's cross-listed with math. It's math, four seventy-three, and it's cross-listed with electrical engineering, and that's I teach from my book, and that's a primary thing for me. So I'm switching back and forth between neuroscience and my math course, and then every semester I teach a half semester of the baby version of the math course. While I'm thinking of it, do you need this to be in spring versus fall? If so, we better make that change.
Yeah, I think there was a discussion about that that came through already with Erhan, right? I think there was some statement about that earlier, and he said he was going to take care of getting the switch to happen. So I saw that in an email.
So far,
Erhan's pretty good. He can see things years in advance, so that's great.
Right now I'm locked in on spring.
And
next semester I'm teaching this math 493. So
And so we have a couple of years to transition it over. Obviously, we want to get people in it next time you offer. But we do have a little while before it's in the cycle of required, right, for this program. In fact, this program doesn't start until 2022, right? I think. So that would be freshman, and then this course doesn't happen until junior year. So I think it's 2024.
I'll teach this in spring of 22. And then
I think then Erhan is aware of when it needs to switch to, I don't know if it was fall or if we got it in the spring at the end. That's something we'll have to ask Andrew where it got approved, where the final curriculum map worked out.
I don't see how it can happen other than fall of 23.
I think it's actually 2024 before it's into the part of the curriculum that we have. Now, there's always these things where maybe you can get a student with the overlap in the first year. Maybe you can get people transitioning and transferring into the program before, you know, maybe at the sophomore year. And that's the way you can start to fill in the program in advance. And I don't know if Andrew has plans to do that or not.
Well, I think it's important because I don't have a huge following from electrical engineering. They take this kind of as like, oh, that sounds kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, but we get a concentration track in for our current students. And then it becomes, there's these technical electives that go into the concentration track. And I think that's what we were planning on doing to get people to take the courses in advance is our current bioengineering students then getting them into the class if they're interested in neuroengineering as a concentration. Yeah.
We need some experience with what neuroscience students know relative to what electrical engineers know. So it may be a rude awakening to find out that they can't do the homework that I've got all written out.
Yeah.
We've got to do a retro on that.
Yeah. But the bioengineering and neuroengineering students will have the background that this looks perfect for it. And like I said, I right now for the juniors in bioengineering, I'm teaching Hodgkin-Huxley and differential equations describing physiology for all the organ systems in our BioE302, which is modeling human physiology, and basically transport. And we have a transport class too, which has, you know, second order, even PDEs and things like that. And the students are fairly comfortable, you know, dealing with the math associated with that. And it looks to me like, yes, I think, you know, when I start to see CRC Press and things like that as supplementary books, I start to get concerned, right? Because it's not what your lectures look like. Your lectures look like describing the situation well, and the equations are more of the ODE type, and they seem very, very well suited to what the background would be. So I think they're going to challenge the students. I don't think they're going to, you know, they wouldn't come in and be very comfortable with that, but I think they're going to be fine.
I'm not using this Evans and Slack as a source at all.
Yeah.
It's just there for them to find out about red blood cells, which I
don't. Yeah. I like the, it looks really awesome, but
it's an amazing book, but it's not good for this course. And for, as far as the math is concerned, my book covers it extremely well. Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yep. Now I think that makes sense. You know, so I think in general, the level and coverage looks appropriate, but it'll be good to get BioEs in there so we can see how they adapt to it and like it. And it'd be really interesting to get some BioEs in that have been through maybe 302 and transport too, because I think we need to understand what courses they've had prior to your course in the neuroengineering curriculum that would prepare them. You know, there's sort of there's the foundational background, but then there's also the shock and understanding for the student that they do have the background. And that takes a little bit for them to usually pick up when they first experience physiology with, you know, the differential equation description of it or the circuit description of it. They have to realize that they do have the background, and that can be a bit of a shock for them too, to try to find their footing when they see the material in that form. So, but yeah, I think that's it. I think that we'll have to take a look through. I was looking, I can't see the lectures. I'll have to figure out how to get the Echo 360 so I can actually take a look at what the coverage is, or I can take a look at the notes or something and see if.
Well, you can watch these videos.
I wasn't able to, so I have to see how to get access to it. So
that makes no sense.
Yeah, I get this enter email and I put my email in and it doesn't say I can access it. So I'll have to figure out how to do that. I'm getting this when I click on them, and then I type in my email and it says not, I don't have an account or something. It's probably just a matter of creating an account or something. I probably need to watch this video.
Did you click on my link? Or did you click on 360?
These are the links I click from. So if I'm in
your course, go to my website and click one of those.
Yeah.
I've got a direct, no, not the first one, because that may be different. But go down and that's part two. That's good. So there was a few lectures at the beginning where I had a few problems. So
how about this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
No, it's still doing the same thing.
Yeah, I just need to, I probably don't have an account registered in with Echo 360 and affiliated with the university. So I just need to watch their video here and go through. So I'll figure that out. And that way, that'll help me understand a little bit better about the level too. So
it's critical that you watch the videos, or at least, you know,
yeah,
you can skip through them pretty fast, but you need to.
Yeah, I need to see what the level is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was looking at the homeworks, and the homeworks look, you know, they look difficult, but they look good. So yeah.
Did you find the solutions there?
Yeah, the solutions there too. Yeah.
Normally at the beginning of the semester, I delete the solutions, but I haven't done.
Yeah. That. Yeah. So that'd be good. I'll go through and take a look at the solutions too. So yeah.
I'm kind of shocked you can't see those videos, because I worked with the IT help people, and they told me what I had to do in order to make the videos available to the outside world. And I did that. And
yep. Yeah, we cover this equation in 302 too. And that, so those are also junior. So to kind of give you a frame of reference, obviously the neuroengineering students wouldn't be taking my 302 course, I don't think, But yeah, so, but they're comfortable with this equation when we get to it, but we do it in Simulink, like we, like I said, which, you know, there's some drawbacks there.
I found Simulink to be very, very difficult to use. And I had a student using it and she couldn't figure it out either.
Yeah. We do all of our organ system simulations there.
Okay.
And there are some nice things about it, but there are also some things that are not nice too. So, yep. So
it's important to have the latest version of MATLAB.
Yeah. It does change on the version. Yeah.
Big differences.
And with the licensing that we're experiencing, there are some challenges there too. So, yeah. So I think this is good. I think I have enough to look at. In terms of just the general comment, the foundation is great. I think this is the right level to come in at. And I think the students will do well, but it'll be great to get one in there and see how it goes. And then where you get to is awesome. I love the where you end up at in terms of, diving into hearing in more detail, because that really makes it, how is information from the world around getting translated and represented in the system? I think that's important for them to see, to really take a real signal and understand how it's being interpreted. And so I think that's great. And then I like the AI link at the end too, because I think that's something that our students will be very interested in associated with this too. And of course then ties them to the popular press and what's going on right now too. So I think that's great. I like the overall, I think, I wonder if how much of the foundational basis is, but it, when I say that, I look at your topics and they look perfectly reasonable to me. So I'll have to take a look through and go through, like I said.
If you can't see the video, you're just not going
to
get it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'll watch that little short video, how to register. And that's probably all I'm missing. So, yep.
Go to IT help.
Yeah.
Engineering help. Yeah. They, and get them and involve me in it too, because I want to make this so that people can see it from the outside. Do you have any problem if somebody could see it from the outside?
I don't. I know there was one thing, like the models that I'm using in my 302 course. I got some feedback from the college level, from the dean's office, that they were a little bit upset I had shared everything out CCBYSA, and because they were hoping to brand things a little bit more and keep control over content. So but if they're interested in that, they really should come to the faculty in general and tell us like what they want and what license should go with things. They
can't tell you that after the fact.
I know, it's too late. I distributed lectures, materials, and basically PDFs associated with descriptions of the models. And
distribute videos?
I didn't distribute, I distributed PDFs and the models. The videos were through my webpage only. The models though, here's what probably got them upset. Mathworks.com, Brad Sutton. This is how I distributed the material. I distributed through MATLAB website. And the reason is MATLAB's funded me for a semester to convert everything over to Simulink. So I released them through them. I was getting like a couple, I was getting like 30 requests per month when I was hosting it myself to download. And so when MATLAB came along and said, look, we'll just give you a course website, I said, fine, that sounds great to me. I don't have to keep track. And they keep track because you have to have a MATLAB account to download. So I think I only put 3 of the models in here. I put the cardiovascular muscle and then the Hodgkin-Huxley in here.
Have you seen that Michigan, University of Michigan, they've modeled all the different systems.
They have the digital human or whatever project. Yeah.
Really good website. I cite it.
Yeah. We are hoping to create a link between simulation and then lab course where you can actually measure, like this is a cardiovascular model. And let me see if I can zoom in. This is a cardiovascular model. I can't zoom in. But it does a really good job of measuring pulse pressure and cardiac resistance and arterial compliance. And then we do a lab where people then measure their own and then they exercise, and you're not supposed to be able to change your compliance measure, but your peripheral resistance should go down. And they actually can make some measurements, and if they exercise long enough, they can understand more about why the model works and why it doesn't, but they can also get a change in peripheral resistance. It'd be great to have like some components along those lines where you can make measurements that match the simulations too, which you have the data from the papers really integrated into your course, which is really helpful for that. And then, you know, even like transmission rates, and we could look at maybe a frog nerve model or something, you know, too. So
you're talking about spike rates.
Yeah, spike rates or even velocity, pulse velocity there and stuff too. So, yep. So,
well, this has been very helpful.
Yep, this is good. Yep. So we'll take a look and try to watch the videos and then get back to you on the pieces. But I think getting a couple undergrads in for the next offering will be really critical. And so I'll talk to Andrew about the concentration track associated with that too, which is how we're going to get the students in. So, yep. Sounds great. All right.